Welcome back to SpaceX Daily, everyone. Today, we're diving into the latest news regarding the Falcon 9 and its recent grounding. Joining me to unpack this is spaceflight expert Neil Astrolite. Neil, always a pleasure to have you on.
Thanks for having me, Sarah. Always exciting times in the world of spaceflight, even with the occasional hiccup.
Indeed. So, the big news is the FAA has cleared the Falcon 9 for its Hera mission after that second stage malfunction during the Crew 9 mission. What are your initial thoughts on this decision?
Well, it's certainly a vote of confidence in SpaceX's ability to address the issue. The FAA statement emphasizes the absence of a second stage reentry for the Hera mission, suggesting they've identified that as a key risk factor in the previous incident.
That's interesting. It sounds like they're taking a very targeted approach to risk mitigation here, focusing on the specific anomaly rather than issuing a blanket grounding.
Exactly. And this is where the technical details become crucial. Understanding exactly what went wrong with the second stage separation and how SpaceX has addressed it is key to assessing the FAA's decision.
Speaking of ambitious space companies, Rocket Lab stock has been on a tear lately, up 120% in the past year. They're aiming to be a vertically integrated player, kind of like a mini SpaceX. What's your take on their prospects?
They're definitely one to watch. Their Electron rocket has carved out a niche in the small satellite launch market, and their space systems business is growing rapidly. That said, the big question mark is their new Neutron rocket.
Right, the Neutron. It's considerably larger than the Electron and puts them in more direct competition with SpaceX. But it's also a huge gamble, isn't it?
Absolutely. Developing a new rocket is incredibly capital-intensive, as we're seeing with their negative free cash flow. If they can pull it off and start taking market share from SpaceX, the payoff could be enormous. But it's a big if.
And their valuation seems to reflect that potential upside, with a price-to-sales ratio significantly higher than the market average. It seems investors are already pricing in a lot of success.
They are. And while their revenue growth has been impressive, their gross margins are still relatively low. So even if they hit their revenue targets, profitability is not guaranteed.
So, a classic case of a high-risk, high-reward investment then. What would you say to investors considering jumping on the Rocket Lab bandwagon?
I'd say buckle up for a volatile ride. This is not a stock for the faint of heart. If Neutron succeeds, the sky's the limit. But if it falters, the stock could come crashing back down to Earth.
So, Neil, shifting gears to another exciting mission, SpaceX is set to launch Hera spacecraft towards the asteroid Dimorphos. This is the one NASA's DART mission famously nudged off course last year, right?
Exactly, Sarah. Hera is essentially the follow-up act, going in for a closer look at the aftermath of DART's impact. It's like sending in the forensics team after the big event.
And what are the main objectives for Hera? What are we hoping to learn from this post-impact investigation?
Well, Hera has a few key tasks. First, it's going to be measuring the size and depth of the crater left by DART. This will tell us a lot about the energy released during the impact and the composition of the asteroid itself.
That's fascinating. It's almost like an archaeological dig, but in space.
Precisely. And beyond the crater analysis, Hera will also be deploying two CubeSats, miniaturized spacecraft, to study Dimorphos' internal structure, surface minerals, and even its gravity field. All this data will help us build a much more comprehensive picture of this asteroid.
So it's not just about understanding this particular impact, but also gathering crucial data for future planetary defense missions, right?
Absolutely. DART was a remarkable demonstration of our ability to deflect an asteroid, but Hera is about refining that capability. By studying the long-term effects of DART's impact, we can improve our models and ensure that if we ever need to deflect a real threat, we can do so with confidence.
Speaking of ambitious timelines, Elon Musk seems to have set his sights on Mars once again, aiming for a crewed mission by 2028. What are your thoughts on this, Neil? Is this timeline even remotely feasible, especially considering the recent setbacks with Starship's development?
Well, Sarah, knowing Elon, ambitious is practically his middle name. And while his track record of pushing boundaries is undeniable, this 2028 target does seem a bit, shall we say, optimistic. Technically, Starship still has a laundry list of milestones to achieve before we can even dream of Mars. We're talking full orbital flights, in-space refueling, and of course, proving its mettle with lunar landings for the Artemis program.
Right, and let's not forget the elephant in the room, the FAA. Their ongoing feud with SpaceX over Starship testing and those hefty fines certainly aren't helping matters. It almost feels like there's a deliberate effort to stall Starship's progress.
It's hard to ignore the political undertones here, Sarah. The Biden administration's stance towards Musk and his ventures has been, well, frosty to say the least. And when you consider the national security implications, especially with China breathing down our necks in the space race, this bureaucratic wrangling could have far-reaching consequences.
It's a complex situation, no doubt. On one hand, safety regulations are crucial, especially when you're talking about a rocket as powerful as Starship. But on the other hand, excessive red tape and potentially politically motivated delays could stifle innovation and jeopardize America's leadership in space exploration. This Starlink situation in Nigeria is quite interesting, Neil. It seems they've hiked up their prices significantly, and the local telecom providers are crying foul. What's your take on this whole regulatory disparity?
It's a classic case of David and Goliath, Sarah, with a regulatory twist. You have these established Nigerian telecom operators who've been investing heavily in infrastructure, but they're hamstrung by price controls. Then Starlink swoops in, a relative newcomer with minimal local investment, and they're allowed to increase prices substantially. It does raise questions about fairness and a level playing field.
The Nigerian Communications Commission, the NCC, is saying they need to conduct a cost-based study before allowing local operators to adjust their tariffs. But that hasn't stopped them from letting Starlink raise their prices. It seems a little contradictory, don't you think?
Absolutely. The NCC's actions, or lack thereof, are raising eyebrows. It begs the question, are they truly looking out for the best interests of the Nigerian people or playing favorites? This situation could set a dangerous precedent, not just in Nigeria, but for other developing markets looking to attract foreign investment in the tech sector.
Speaking of interesting leadership moves, Starlink Qatar just appointed Cyril Anand as their new CEO. What do you make of this appointment, Neil? Starlink Qatar isn't exactly launching rockets, are they?
Right, it's a bit of a head-scratcher at first glance, Sarah. This isn't SpaceX we're talking about, but rather a subsidiary of the Ooredoo Group. They're big in Qatar, dealing with consumer electronics, ICT services, even BPO. So, a different ballgame altogether.
So, why bring in a Harvard MBA with a track record in telecom? It seems a bit like using a sledgehammer to crack a nut, wouldn't you say?
Perhaps. But look at the press release, Sarah. They're emphasizing Anand's experience in digital transformation, smart city development, and launching digital platforms. Sounds to me like Starlink Qatar wants to be more than just a retailer and service provider. They want to be a regional tech player.
Interesting. So you think this Anand appointment is a signal that they're looking to make some big moves, maybe even beyond Qatar?
It's certainly possible. They're talking about expanding their portfolio, enhancing customer experiences, and leveraging AI. Those are buzzwords, sure, but they also suggest ambition. It'll be interesting to see if Anand can deliver.
Let's shift gears now to a topic that's been generating a lot of buzz lately, SpaceX's dominance in the satellite internet market. Neil Neaton-Pie argues that SpaceX's near monopoly on Earth's orbital space is a marked failure of global governance. How concerned should we be about this?
Very concerned, Sarah. Pie is right to ring the alarm bells. SpaceX's dominance isn't just about one company cornering a market. It's about the potential for that market power to translate into political influence, something Musk has shown a proclivity for.
Pi draws a parallel to the East India Company, which started as a trading company, but eventually controlled vast swaths of India. Is that a fair comparison?
It's provocative, but it underscores the point. We're talking about essential infrastructure here, communication, potentially even military applications. Handing control of that to a single entity, however innovative, is risky. Pi argues for international cooperation and regulations to ensure space remains humanity's common resource. I think that's critical. We need a global framework, not a free-for-all.
And that brings us to the crux of the issue, doesn't it? the current system, or lack thereof, rewards the first movers. SpaceX, with its reusable rockets and ambitious launch cadence, has effectively staked its claim in low Earth orbit. What's the solution? How do we retroactively impose order on a system that's already tilted in one direction?
It won't be easy, Sarah. There are no simple answers. But Pai's suggestion of fostering homegrown competition is a start. India, with its burgeoning space program, could play a key role here. We also need to rethink the allocation of orbital slots and radio spectrum. The current first-come, first-served model is clearly inadequate. It's time for a more equitable and sustainable approach, one that benefits all of humanity, not just a select few.
Indeed. A thought-provoking discussion, Neil, as always. We've covered a lot of ground today, from the intricacies of satellite broadband to the geopolitical implications of space exploration. One thing is clear. The final frontier is no longer a distant dream. It's rapidly becoming a reality, and with it comes a whole new set of challenges and opportunities. That's all the time we have for today's episode of SpaceX Daily. Thanks for listening.